This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily here for another hour. Glad to have you with us on this Monday, getting you ready for a week. We've talked a little bit about the NCAA ruling. We'll get more into that this hour. We've talked about the Royals. We'll get more into Cags specifically in his first week in this hour. Before we do either of those things, Tommy, let's talk about the Thunder. They get game two, which we expected, right? It looked like it was going to be maybe just a massive blowout. Got a little closer than that. Indiana battled back a little bit. But they did what they needed to do. You can't go down 0-2 on the road. They split the thing. They do what they've done all postseason long, which is win a game following losing a game. And they look good on the way doing it. They kind of did their thing in that game. Indiana kind of felt like they did their thing too, and it wasn't enough, which I think is probably what we expected coming into the series.
Can I tell you one of the things that I have such a major issue with the NBA in the finals? This is like a side note, like not even related to the game. I hate the scheduling. The scheduling is so bad for the NBA Finals.
It's the worst.
To be honest with you, I completely forgot that there was even a Game 2 going on because there was such a gap in between Game 1 and Game 2. They played Game 1 on Thursday. Yep. Why did they not play Game 2 on Saturday?
Why didn't they play it on Friday? Yeah, I was looking like, Saturday. I'm like, where is the game? And I'm like, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's the finals. They give them like 9 days off in between.
What a terrible missed opportunity to have a game on a Saturday night because there wasn't anything else going on. You didn't even have the Stanley Cup finals on Saturday night. Like, there was nothing outside of baseball going on Saturday night. A terrible missed opportunity, I felt like. Anyway, like, that's kind of a side note.
The good news is they'll play again on Wednesday.
Oh, my God. Why do we take such a break between these games?
I've had this issue for as long as I can remember. I hate it.
Like, I can understand, like the series is reverting back to Indianapolis now. Like, I understand taking a break for that. There is no need to take a break from Thursday to Sunday from game one and game two when both teams are in the same city and nobody has to travel. That makes no sense to me. But regardless, yeah, the Thunder get one. They're able to get back and even the series at, one game apiece. They had to have that. They had to have game two. I was concerned that the Thunder wouldn't be able to bounce back after the back-breaking game one loss. I thought they looked pretty solid. I felt like they did what they needed to do. It did get a little bit close towards the end. But yeah, you feel a little bit better, I think, if you're the Thunder now heading back to Indianapolis, being able to even that series up.
I think it's a pretty good formula for Oklahoma City to win a game which is to get an early lead like that, right, and just hold on to it. It's what they couldn't do in game one. They couldn't hold on to it. They did get the early lead. So, like, if I'm Oklahoma City today, yeah, I feel fine. That's how we should be playing these games, right? And if I'm Indiana, I also feel fine, though. I got to be honest. Like, you split on the road. They didn't let game two get away from them. If Indiana's going to do more, and I've seen, you know, basketball people say they've got to hit more threes, and maybe that's the case. I don't know that part. But I can tell you that, like, psychologically, Indiana feels really good going back to Indiana. That game yesterday did not get away from them. It looked like it might. They are what that is to me. That's their thing, right? They're going to never go away in a game, which means they'll probably give themselves opportunities to win games. Now, they still have to execute at the end, and they have to count on Oklahoma City not executing. That's why I still like Oklahoma City. I think at the end of the day, Oklahoma City will execute, especially when you've got a guy like SGA who gets to the line and does those things to help win games at the end of games. But I don't think Indiana looks overmatched in the series to the sense they're like, man, they have no chance. I think they'll hang in these games. I think there's a decent chance they can win one or two more of them. And we'll see, because they don't, they're not as talented as Oklahoma City. At least it doesn't look like it to me. They're going to have to do that if they want to hang around. And I think they can. So it's really kind of which team imposes their will at this point.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing with the Pacers has been their opportunity to, you know, make the clutch shots. But when they're not in a position to make the clutch shots, when the game has gotten away from them, they've got to claw back into it. And the Pacers have shown they can do it. But if the deficit gets too big, if the hole gets too big for them to dig themselves out of, then they're not in that position to execute late in the game from a clutch perspective. And that's what the Thunder, that's how they should be viewing the remainder of this series. You've got to start games lights out. You've got to... Yep. Get the Pacers in a position to where they can't be clutch, because right, you have extended a lead out so far that they can't come back from it. If you let Indiana hang around, and even hanging around could be a 15-point deficit, a 12-point deficit, somewhere around that world in the fourth quarter, then at that point, Tyrese Halliburton and the entire crew, they feel like they can get back into it. They feel like the door has cracked open, and they've got a chance to get back in it and then be clutch down the stretch in the late minutes of a game. But if the Thunder can't get a lead out to a point to where you've then removed that clutch ability in Indiana, I mean, I'm talking like a 20-point-plus lead, and Indiana can't claw their way back, that's got to be the recipe, I think, for the Thunder moving forward.
I think that, yeah, I mean, Oklahoma City just provided us their recipe. I mean, that's exactly what they want to do, what you just described, like get out to the early lead and then just maintain it. Indiana's going to give you something late in a game like that. We have seen now for an entire postseason, that's what they do. If you're Oklahoma City, you just got to make sure that it's not like it's not within reach.
If the Pacers can hang around and have it be a 2 or 3 possession game with a couple of minutes left, who are you taking? Are you taking the Pacers,
right?
Like they've done that, right? Like they've done that multiple times. So it is imperative if the Thunder want to win, especially on the road, and if they want to return back to Oklahoma City with a lead, with a chance to clinch and win the championship, they've got to keep Indiana at arm's length throughout the entire game, maintain a lead, get out early. Because again, if it comes down to a couple possession game down the stretch, I don't know anybody that's not going to take Indiana in that scenario.
Oklahoma City is a 5.5-point favorite on the road in game three. Like, there's a pretty good chance Oklahoma City covers that number. I think game three feels pretty important for Indiana, but it also, to me, like, if you're Oklahoma City, now's your chance to really do something. Like, do something to kind of put them on their heels a little bit. And if you can go into their place after they had the thrilling game one and kind of do this stuff, well, basically just what you did in game two, that's going to make it pretty hard for Indiana. If Indiana plays them tight or wins, I think we're looking at a really interesting series here. But, you know, I'm with you. I think Oklahoma City's ultimately going to be what they are and do what they do and get the win here. I had a lot of conversations about the Thunder this weekend, oddly, more than I've had all year. And it's, I know why. Obviously, they're in the finals and they're in the spotlight. But they're in an interesting position long term, like of what they do. They got so many picks. They're so good at making picks. They have a challenge, as small market NBA teams do, of like keeping guys and drawing in free agents. And like, I'm looking at it and I'm, because you see the embarrassment of riches they have. They have all these picks. I think it's like six in the next 2 years. And a lot of them are first round picks. And you're like, well, they should trade all those and flip them for a star. But man, I kind of think as I'm watching it, they should just use all their picks because they're so good at it and just get ready for the inevitable that they can't keep everybody. And so they just keep replenishing them. Did we talk about this last week? Like, they remind me so much of what San Antonio was able to do for all of those years. They just kind of picked one guy. And then, like, there were three different versions of the Spurs that won championships, right? And it did it over, I don't know, what was it, four in 15 or 20 years? Like, it was, they just, through the first two, it was like, all right, we've got Duncan, let's keep Duncan. And fortunately for them, Tim Duncan loves San Antonio and loves that vibe and that, you know, so it's like, okay, great. Then they were able to take different pieces to put with him. Another bad example on the other side, Dallas had Dirk, who loved being in Dallas. Great. That's fortunate. But they never could get / keep enough around him to do the damage. Ultimately, they eventually got Tyson Chandler and did it. Oklahoma City had a version of this already with their three stars. They had to, everyone's like, they chose Russell Westbrook. I don't think they chose Russell Westbrook. I think he's the only one that would stay. And it didn't work. So now what they look at this, I'm like, nah, keep the picks and just draft all the players. You're good at drafting players. Just keep doing it.
Yeah, that's been the formula, you know, for Sam Presti and for Mark Dagnault. And, you know, they've built this foundation.
Don't some star.
I would just keep churning that out, right? And, you know, trying to hit on those draft picks, and then you can keep that window conceivably open longer term. You know, like SGA has been so phenomenal. Yep. And what he did in game two compared to game one was his efficiency. And so, yeah, you've got the supporting cast around him. I think as long as you've got SGA as your foundational piece moving forward, as long as that can be, you keep riding that wave as best as you can.
Yep, that's the Thunder. Again, game three will be on Wednesday. So stupid. We'll be back. We'll talk a little bit more about the NCAA ruling. What does it mean for the three Kansas schools? Have that next one. All right, welcome back, everybody. Let's give away a little HTO for you. You want to get an iced tea as it's heating up, sun is shining. You can cool off with an HTO iced tea featuring the new cherry tea, one of 26 flavors to choose from. These will be good for East Wichita, West Wichita, or Derby. All you got to do is text the keyword tea to 20357. TEA 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. And cool off with some HTO on us. All right, we come back in. We went through sort of a bird's eye look on this NCAA settlement. We will have months probably to try to dissect this. So I think as you look at it, just to recap, the house settlement we've been waiting on for months and months is settled. There will be revenue sharing. They've set some parameters. Here are the dollars. Here's how it works. They have to go back and back pay everybody. All of that's going to be what it is, right? I think the future is what we're all far more interested in. What does the future look like? And how does it pertain to Kansas, Kansas State, Wichita State? I think, you know, it's fun to think about. I'd hate to be the one having to sort all this out on those campuses. But I think it's a pretty tremendous opportunity for Wichita State. We tease that we'll start with the Shockers. Forever, my thought has always been, Wichita State lives in an environment where they don't have to pay football players. So as payments are happening, it, in theory, based on history, right? It's not like we're pulling this out of thin air. This was a program not that long ago that had people fired up enough to do things with coaching contracts and all the things that they were doing if they can generate that again, and they have to find the success before they can, I understand that. And it's harder than it was then. I understand that too. But if they can, in theory, the revenue share that they are required to do, and I don't know what their number is going to be. That's what we have to find out. Maybe we'll have that in the next little while. But if it's $20 million for schools with football, right? What is it going to be for a school like Wichita State? I don't know yet. But it sure feels like, Tommy, whatever that number is, we'll be able to skew more heavily to basketball than a lot of schools have to skew it to football because they have more players. Football is the big revenue driver. This is where, like, as you look around and read things, I'm reading one that has the Big East as a big winner in all this, like Big East basketball, because of that very, you know, that thing. So here's what it says about the Big East. And this is a CBS Sports winners and losers article. So I'll just, you know, read it straight from there for you. And this is, again, about Big East basketball. In theory, Big East schools could spend the entire $20 million salary cap on just basketball, or more realistically, spend $8 to $10 million when schools in the Big Ten and SEC are probably more like $2.5 to $4 million. There has been talk about some conferences trying to instill sport-specific spending caps, but there's pretty big skepticism, I guess, that that would fly. Assuming it doesn't, then these conferences that don't like the Big East, and they use them as the example because nobody has football, right, in the Big East. Whereas like the AAC teams have football, but Wichita State doesn't have football. And so, yeah, like if there is a number being shared, schools are going to spend the majority of that number on football because football for them drives the majority of revenue. That's not the case at a school like Wichita State. So if now they have more money to spend on basketball, period, they can spend at least more than their peers. How does that number compare to the Big East or the Big 12? I don't know that yet. Like, are they going to like cap this at some number that, but in theory, I think that like, it's not that far of a reach to say Wichita State could spend on basketball what K-State or some of these big, like what they are spending on basketball because they'll have to spend so much on football. I think that's very much a possibility, which is what we have always thought it should have been anyway.
Yeah, and I wonder from a smaller perspective what that means with Wichita State's stature in the conference. Because as you mentioned, they don't have football. A lot of their colleagues in the American Conference have football. And so they're going to have to manage the budget. They're going to have to manage the spending amongst football and basketball and other sports where Wichita State theoretically wouldn't have to do that. So it makes me wonder, like, what does that mean from a competitive standpoint in that conference? And I would think if things move forward, you know, this way, and, you know, I know that obviously there's the House settlement, but if there's no sport-specific spending cap and all of that to level the playing field, it would lead me to believe that Wichita State, the expectation should be, from a conference perspective, that they are able to probably spend more than their counterparts in the conference. And then the question becomes, how then does that translate into success?
Well, it should translate because they'll have a recruiting advantage in that sport. Memphis is a great example. And this is where this all still, and this pertains to, you know, KU, K-State. What I don't understand yet though, is how they can keep the NIL portion down. Right. If they are successful in this clearinghouse that they're trying to establish, that's where I think you'll see advantage Wichita State. Because if they don't, if there's not an NIL component to this, then yeah, like Memphis has a hard decision to make. Memphis, who's been spending a ton on basketball, do they now need to spend that on football? Or do they punt on football, which is less likely because it's such a revenue driver? And then what does we, so yes, I think in theory, absolutely, Wichita State should have an advantage in the league in basketball because is there another? I don't think there's another basketball only school in the American, is there? I don't think so. They should have more of a budget than these other schools. Now, there also could very well be a lessening of their cap because they don't have football. Again, there's so much of this where we're just like, okay, well, yeah, if 20 million is the cap when there's football, is 20 million the cap when there's not football, or is it 8 million? Even then, like, even if that's the case, I still would think they'll spend more on basketball than their peers, even if that does happen, which is probably likely in this. Because Wichita State can't share $20 million. They don't make $20 million because they don't have football. So that's for Wichita State. I think this is a win. I think. For K-State, I think it's a wash because I think K-State balances things very well. So I think it's probably a wash for K-State, again, among peers. I think they'll continue to do what they've done, and you'll see it. So I don't have, like, I don't think much will change for them. As we're just talking about, like, compared to everybody else they play, they already do a nice job, in my opinion, of balancing all this out. KU's the really interesting one. KU right now, Tommy, if the same thing we just said about Memphis, like, if this gets reined in a little bit and there's basically a salary cap, that will be interesting for Kansas. Kansas is building a new football stadium. Kansas is reinvesting big time into the football program. In a salary cap format, is that to the detriment of men's basketball? I don't want to say that's a reality, but I want to say it's absolutely a possibility. As they prioritize football, if there's only so much you can spend now, if they prioritize football, it means less of a priority on basketball. And I don't think they're turning back on prioritizing football.
Yeah, they're absolutely not. I think that it would be much more of a detriment to Kansas if we were looking at the Kansas football program from 4 years ago, 7 years ago, when they were in the depths, because there was not much revenue coming in. Now they didn't spend. I remember reading that Kansas was at the very, very, very bottom of the Big 12, and it wasn't particularly close as far as the amount of money that they were spending on football in general at that time, but they weren't making any money. The facilities were lagging behind. The player development was lagging behind. Obviously, they weren't winning. There wasn't a whole lot of revenue coming in, really, outside of the fact that they were lumped in with the rest of the Big 12 as far as the TV deal was concerned. At that point, they were able to make some money, but they were fortunate to be in a conference where they were able to generate revenue in that regard. I would feel a lot more negative about the long-term implications for Kansas if we were talking about the Kansas football program of the past. But they've shown the investment in Kansas football. They've shown that the driving of revenue has been extremely important. And so, yeah, like, as far as the expenses, they're higher than what they were, but the revenue should be higher as well. And they should be on a much more level playing field with their counterparts in the conference from a football perspective. Now, I don't disagree with you as far as basketball is concerned. They're not going to be able to be, at least conceivably, head and shoulders above everybody else in their conference or nationally and going after players and that sort of thing, because while leveling the playing field is good for them from a football perspective, it's probably less than ideal from a basketball perspective. So I don't disagree with you there.
Yeah, and I think that should be a level of moderate concern. I always used to ask KU fans when I first got here, like, what would you rather? This was during the Big 12 streak, right? When they were on the streak. I said, what would you rather see? A bowl game or the streak continue? Like, which, because the streak was this thing, right? Like, it was this very tangible thing. And to me, it was one of the most impressive things we've ever seen. The streak of conference titles. It's like, what would you rather have? The streak end, but you make a bowl game? Most KU fans said they would be happy for the streak to end if it meant a bowl game. Like, at that point, things had been so bad.
Yeah.
And I bring that up because I do think, as much as we, most of us, K-State fans notwithstanding, love the lore of KU basketball and the blue blood status and all of that, I wonder, like, and it's not just Kansas, by the way. This would be the same case for really everybody but Duke and UConn. As far as the blue bloods are concerned, Kentucky's going to have the same struggle. North Carolina is going to have the same struggle. Gonzaga won't, obviously, but like, what happens now with these blue bloods that are also at football playing schools? If there can only be so much money spent, when you stack them up, football's always going to drive more revenue.
I think you're going to end up having those schools that you just mentioned, and probably most Power Four schools, advocate for a sport-specific spending limit to try, not even necessarily to benefit them. It wouldn't benefit them directly, but to limit what the non-football schools can do.
Yeah.
Your Villanovas, your Creightons, sure. Your Gonzagas, your UConns. Like, those are the programs that I think you'd be looking at, even Wichita State for that matter, mm-hmm. to try to limit them and keep the playing field level from a basketball perspective nationally.
But even if that happens, which is what this winners and losers article brought up, which they're skeptical that this could happen. But even if it did, Gonzaga's at that world, maybe Gonzaga's not the best example. UConn is going to spend more on basketball than Kansas will. Like, even if they put the caps in, unless they put the caps so low, right? But like these power programs that we know generate the money, like Kansas, right? It's not so much about they can't, like, it's about how they have to distribute the funds. They'll have, in theory, less funds to distribute. And I don't know what they distribute. So just like we're talking in hypotheticals here. They'll have, because they have to devote more to football of the money that they can spend, it in theory will mean less. Even if they put a cap on it, they're still, these schools are still going to skew to football. I mean, they just are, because football, you can put a whole lot more butts in the seats, and the TV portions of the deals are largely based on football. What I wonder is what we've talked about forever, which is, should the Big 12 break out its basketball product in a separate TV deal? Does that create a different revenue cap for them under a new deal that's separate? Like, that would make some sense. But again, that's so complicated. I don't think we're anywhere close to that. I think in the short term, it's going to mean Kansas and Kentucky and North Carolina and some of these schools probably don't have the inherent advantages they've had for a long time as blue bloods, because they just will not be like, I mean, can you think of an example anywhere of a Power Four blue blood basketball program that plays football that would prioritize basketball over football?
Not a chance. No way.
So I can't either. And so, like, it feels a little bit inevitable, right? That those blue blood basketball programs are going to take a hit here. Like, they're going to take a hit. Now, they'll still have their coaches to lean on. And this is where this could all get thrown out the window. This is only if the NIL clearinghouse thing happens, if they're able to pull that off. Because if that doesn't happen, then it doesn't really matter, right? They'll make their money through NIL, and you won't have to worry about it as much. The basketball players will get NIL earnings and whatever, fair market value, whatever you want to call it. And honestly, like, if you're talking about it, if I'm a company that wants the most bang for my buck as far as the NIL space with athletes, it would be a shoe company with college basketball players. That's where your biggest return is, I think. They could, like what we've seen, what a Cooper Flagg had, he had a New Balance deal, right? You're going to tell me that that's not fair market value, whatever it is that New Balance paid Cooper Flagg to be in those commercials? A shoe apparel company? When you see what shoe apparel companies are paying NBA athletes, you're going to tell me whatever it was wasn't fair market value? Who's Kansas's apparel partner right now?
Adidas.
Adidas. Okay. So Darren Peterson's a star, right? He's the highest rated recruit they've ever had. Adidas wants to come in and help him. We're going to fast forward and pretend like he's coming in as we're in this new era. And Adidas says, we want to give him whatever the number is, $5 million. This clearinghouse is not going to be able to say, oh, that's not fair market value. Yes, it is, because Adidas or whoever just paid LeBron James about $1 billion to be their shoe guy. So there's some of that still in play too that may help these blue blood programs. How do you assess fair market value on a men's basketball player?
I think it's really I don't want to say it's impossible. I think we haven't really been in that world officially yet. We've been in that world speculatively for a long time where it's like, hey, I think that this guy's worth that. Or like, you know, you've got all the stories of shoe companies paying players under the table and things like that. And that's a perceived value. I think we're now in a world where you've got to try to, and these companies have got, you know, there's a lot more evaluation that has to come into play to figure out what the actual cash value is for some of these players. That makes it really difficult.
And a clearinghouse telling a company what its, you know, value is never makes sense.
Well,
to me.
The value is what they're willing to pay.
That's what I've always
That's
said.
That's the value.
So how are you going to say, you know what? That's not actually like what? Okay.
Yeah. You can price that? Something wherever you want to price it. The value is what the customer will pay. Bottom line.
Yeah. So there's too much still unknown in this, but things to think about as we have rulings are non-basketball revenue. What does NIL look like? What does it look like for programs that have devoted certain dollars, certain places over the years? All of that. All right, when we come back, how about Cags' first week in the big leagues? We'll look at him specifically when we turn on Sports Day. Welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. Glad to have you with us. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH and all across the Odyssey family. Glad to be here with you. It is all Brockton Caster. Max out today. I assume back tomorrow. Max back tomorrow, Tom?
He is, yes.
We're glad to have Max back when we get him. So this is a pretty fun exercise with Jack Caglione's first week. It was interesting. Yesterday, he raised his batting average 150 points, basically, because he went 4-for-4. Going into yesterday, he was batting 095. So he had two hits, Tommy, in 21 at-bats going into yesterday. He had his doubleheader day where it was pretty bad. He had the big double, but he also struck out three times. He was just 1-for-8 total. We know that first game he was 0-for-5, and then he went 0-for-4. The next day he had a hit in Saturday's game, and then he woke up a little bit Sunday. The messaging is pretty clear from the Royals. He's hitting the ball hard. They're good with it. How long, though, do you think that lasts? The expectations we've joked about were way too high on Cags. We told you in the first hour, he is clearly lifting the boat. Like, the boat is rising with him there. For whatever reason, doesn't really matter. Like, it's totally doesn't matter why, but it's happening. Him specifically, though, how much rope do you think he's going to get with these games where he's hitless or one hit? Do you think fans are going to be patient? I think they will be as long as the rest of the offense picks it up, which is the best case scenario for him, by the way. Right now, there's no pressure on him because everybody else has stepped up. And whether that's directly a result of him or not is impossible to quantify, but it makes it a whole lot better for his acclimation, I think, that that's happening. Because if there was pressure on him and these things were happening, I think, not a weekend, but if we fast forward this a couple more weeks, there would be a little urgency that would not be good for his development.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any danger of a lack of patience with him. He's played, what are we at, like six total games in Major League Baseball right now. And it's funny because I've seen a lot of people on social media that whether you're comparing the bad or the good, there's always a comparison to a Royals legend. I saw somebody the other day put up Cags's first like five games in the major leagues. And, you know, entering before yesterday's game when he went 4-for-4 and he had an 0.95 batting average, compared that with like George Brett's first five games in the big leagues and he had like an 0.50 batting average to get started. Like, people are like, it's okay. Like, you're talking about a comparison here with a legend where he's outperforming even George Brett in his first few games. But then Cags has a four-hit game yesterday, and I saw the comparison that, like, the only other Royals rookie to do that within the first few games was Bo Jackson. Okay. You know, so, like, there's always a comparison, the good or the bad, with Cags. I think there is, like, think about the longest leash that you could find and then make it even longer. That's the kind of leash that he's got. There's no concern
about that. He needs to have.
I think he will, though. I think he will, though.
Yeah. I think the Royals will give him that leash. I'm strictly talking about fans.
I think fans will, too.
There was a great risk in calling him up when they did. It doesn't happen for players for a reason. Players don't do what he did for a reason. I think all of this they needed him so badly. I think it probably jaded appropriate expectations to some degree. Again, I've used the comparison because it's the most obvious. Jack Caglione was not a Bobby Witt Jr. type of prospect, not a Bryce Harper type of prospect, like a transcendent, can't miss Hall of Famer looking. You're like, we're probably, you know, no, he's not that kind of prospect. He was a really good prospect, and he was flourishing in the minor leagues this year, but he was drafted sixth overall. He does a thing really well, which is knock the tar out off the ball, right? Like, he hits the ball really hard. There are flaws, though. That's why he was the sixth pick. And so, like, you got to not try to make him what he doesn't even project to be, right? Guys beat their projections, or they don't live up to them all the time. They're just projections. But they're there for a reason, because there's a long, 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 long history and track record in baseball of how guys are going to translate. And so just continue to understand that, and understand that, like, if all goes well, he's going to be a really good baseball player, really good, like a foundational baseball player. But it's not Bobby Witt Jr. At least I like, that's not where people and I think that's what was happening, right? Oh, with Jack Caglione and Bobby Witt Jr., they'll have two pieces that teams would drool over. And, you know, the only players, and I say, again, these are great baseball people that get excited about prospects like we do. You know, the only people that hit the ball as hard as he hits it are Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge. And I'm like, you know, like, well, let's let this kid be a kid, because he got called up faster than anybody wanted him to, except for him. And like there's going to be growing pains, because there just always are. Hopefully he helps this team be better, and I think he will. And honestly, that's all that matters right now. Like, right now, Jack Caglione has to be better than Hunter Renfroe and MJ Melendez. That's the target. That's a realistic expectation. He has to be better than who he replaced. He doesn't yet have to be Aaron Judge. He just has to be better than them to warrant the call-up in the first place, which happened too early, which I still agree with. I think they had to do it. But that's we need to be looking with him.
It's such a low bar. It's such a low bar. And that's why I think I don't think there's any risk of there being any kind of impatience with him and his development.
Outside of, you know, batting below 100 for a month, which isn't going to happen. So I think then as we look into the numbers, and we, you know, the hits thing is a fun one, because of it's such a small sample size and what yesterday did. He's not walking much. He doesn't have one yet. When I say much, that's ultimately in his big league career, that's got to change. I will tell you, though, through six games to have four strikeouts, I'm pretty okay with that. Three of them came in one game, or one day, I should say, two games. But, like, I'm pretty good with that. That to me was the biggest danger for him, is that he was going to strike out more than he had. He's not doing that. And so this chase rate, which is his biggest flaw as a prospect, right now looks like it's not going to be a detriment to him as a big leaguer, because yes, as he chases, he's still making good contact. To me, that's the best sign that we've seen from him thus far in his young career.
The other thing that I will say, you want to talk about that being a great benefit, and I totally agree with you. The other thing that's been really nice is the way he's played right field. And I think that was a major question mark. How are the Royals going to deploy him in the field? And what I love is, and we've seen it a couple of times in a short six-game span, is there's been a late game replacement type thing when it's been John Rave a couple of times come in and play right field. Vinny kind of sits at the end of the game or is pinch ran for, which I'm totally on board with to get some speed on the bases. And then Cags goes and plays first base for the last couple of innings. I love that. I would love to see that continue because I think that obviously late in the game, you want to have your best, you know, defenders out there. And until Cags gets to a point to where he is full throttle at right field, I love the way that they're using that deployment. But I think in the time that he's played in right field, I think he's been fine.
I do too. He's looked fine. I don't think he's had a chance to test the arm, which, remember, this is a power pitching reliever, right? And caught, like, he can hum it. So he's going to have an arm out there. I can't wait to see that. And there's skill involved. It's not about just throwing it hard. But yeah, look, the versatility here, and it's, you talked about Salvador Perez, the captain early. I honestly think that begins with him. Like, just play where you need to be played. Like, whatever you need to do that day, just do it. Because Salvi wants to catch every day. Does he? No. Does he complain about it? I don't think so. But he would love to catch every day. But no, sometimes you're going to DH. Sometimes you're going to play first base. Sometimes you're going to do this. You know, Mikel Garcia, you literally play everywhere. Bobby Witt Jr. only plays shortstop only because he is one of the better defenders we've ever seen. And that's a premium position. Otherwise, I'm sure that if they needed him to go play third base, as he did early in his career, he would be probably just fine to do it. They can't afford to do it. He made a play last night to help save the game. We were talking about a weapon. So it's been good. I think all things considered, the debut week of Cags went well. Now there's going to be a whole different set of like emotions and everything because he's going to be at home for the first time. By the way, our guy TJ Cleland will be there Tuesday. So look for his reporting on 12 News. He's going up for the debut, the home debut of Cags, which is kind of cool. But he'll have to go through that now all over again. And we'll see how that goes. It'd be cool if he gets that first home run at Kauffman.
And they're playing the Yankees. I mean, we'll talk about it more tomorrow, getting ready for the series. That's a difficult series, right? Like, you know, anytime you're playing,
I haven't even looked at the pitching matchups.
Playing a loaded team, you know, like the Yankees and a guy like Aaron Judge and all of that. It's, you know, there's a big spectacle with Cags' debut in general, but then you look at the opponent and the fact that, you know, the Royals, their offense has started to come alive, but you're taking on a big time opponent in the Yankees. It's going to be really critical.
Let me look real quick because I think Rodon pitched last night, so they'll miss the Yankees' best. Well, you could say Fried's their best starter, but yeah, you're feeling decent about your pitching matchups there, especially if Reagan's bounces back in any way. But you've got Bubich, Reagan's, Lugo, and you don't face Rodon there for them. It's a good opportunity for the Royals. A big week, and again, yeah, you're right. We'll get into it tomorrow because you finish it with the A's, another like the White Sox team that you ought to sweep, but. You know, especially playing him at Kauffman. You go.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North convenience stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North convenience stores, fast, friendly, clean.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Play out in Oakland in that weird ballpark.
You
that's
mean
one
Sacramento?
Thing. You get that team at home. You need to be taking advantage of that. But the Yankees could be, look, it's a big, fun, awesome, happy, like it's always fun when the Yankees come to town, especially now when they're good again. And it'll be a challenge for these pitchers. Thank goodness you're not playing them at Yankee Stadium. I'll say that. that's.
Also, as a Braves fan, I throw up in my mouth every time I think about Max Fried pitching for the Yankees. And, of course, that's going to happen this week. He's been phenomenal. It's rough. Rough for
it's
me.
It's he and Bubich right now, wouldn't you say, the leaders for the—
Absolutely, 100%.
For the AL Cy Young?
Yep.
Yeah. So I wish they were playing it. I wish they were pitching up against each other. That would be really cool. But they're not. We'll get to it tomorrow. It is fun. I hate the Yankees as much as any good red-blooded American, but it is fun when they're the opponent. That's why I hate them. There aren't very many teams that can do that across sports. The Yankees are 100% one of those teams, and they're good.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North convenience stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North convenience stores, fast, friendly, clean.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. And let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
But again, and that's going to make for fun. Get the Cags debut now with a big home run against the Yankees. That place is going to go ballistic. It'll be fun, and it'll be packed, I assume, like it always is when the Yankees are in town. All right, we'll come back. More Sports Daily. Don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.